tell me where you stand on the importance of play with kids.
Yeah, well, I stand very firmly on the fact that kids should have the right to play and that they learn a lot through playing and through the arts. And often what we do is we've got our heads so firmly ensconced that they have to learn their letters and numbers, and so they shouldn't be mucking around. But the bottom line is there's really a lot of skills, including the foundation for learning math and learning language and learning reading, that are all rooted in learning how to play. I think we have to really ask ourselves, what would count as success for our children? And when we really ponder it, we could say, if my child comes out with a really good score on a reading test and on a math test, they will be successful and they will go on to be a CEO of a major company and graduate from Harvard Business School. On the other hand, there's another view of success, and that still gets you to being CEOs in Harvard Business School, but it's being a happy, healthy, caring, collaborative, social person who's a critical thinker, who's creative, and who's also going to be a great citizen of tomorrow. Somebody who's going to participate in that classroom and actually even pick up the dishes at home. And how do we go about raising that child? I have asked a lot of parents and a lot of teachers, which view of success do you want for your child? And everybody picks number two. So then the question is, how do we get there? Now, if we really want number one, we know how to do it. Drill and kill. But if we really want number two, social, compassionate, caring, critically thinking, creative human beings, there's another way to go. And we talk about that through the six C's. And they are a suite of six skills that we think all children ought to have. One, knowing how to get along with other human beings. Collaboration. Knowing how to speak with one another. And to listen, not just to talk. We're so used to talking on Facebook, we've come to believe everybody cares what we had for dinner. They don't. So that's communication. Number three is content. You do need to know your multiplication tables, and you do need to know how to read. But that's only part of what it means to have a well-rounded suite of skills. Critical thinking. That builds on the content that you know, but goes beyond it. And creative imagination builds on your critical thinking and content. It is said that the most creative artists in the world are actually those who know a lot. So they actually have knowledge that they're building on to be creative. They're inventing something new. And finally, the confidence to learn from failure and to get up and do it again. Sometimes that's called grit. And sometimes it's having the growth mindset to know that you can do it and that your ideas count. The six C's equal what we do in the arts and what we do when we play.
And, you know, nurturing creativity in their children is something that many, many parents think about a lot. Can you give me some specific examples of things that might nurture creativity?
Well, there are a lot of things that nurture creativity. I think one of them is learning how to color outside the lines. When you color outside the lines, you have to think of new forms and new shapes, and you're not bound and constrained all the time to just making the same old thing. Or building your own gadget. We've all heard of makers' fairs. And the makers' fairs are so wonderful because we have an idea and we get to put it together with toilet paper rolls. And when we can think of new uses for toilet paper rolls, well, by gosh, we are being an inventor, and an inventor has creativity at her very core. So I think part of what we need to do is get out of the box a little bit more and maybe give the boxes to our kids and see how many things they can make out of a standard cardboard box.
When it comes to, say, musical ability, I know you've done work with early language development. Is there anything that you can say that would make sense to the layperson about how those things work together or nurturing a musical talent in a child?
I'm going to give you an example. I have a darling 22-month-old little girl, and my 22-month-old loves to sing and she loves to dance. Now, I decided, why not create songs that are relevant to what she happens to be doing at the moment. So that's what we do. We sing and dance all the time. And you would think that when we are playing together, we are creating a Broadway show right in the living room. Now, you know, a lot of people, they're very shy. They go, oh, I'm not a singer. Oh, I'm not a dancer. Neither am I. But it's okay to make up stuff for a 22-month-old. And guess what? They don't even clap when you're done. You've just had a wonderful experience. As they get older, let them be composers, not just memorizers. Let them put together the notes in a new way. When I was a young child, I hated to practice piano. I really did. I'm not sure why, because I should be much better at skill than I am. And that's true of all the instruments I play. But my piano teacher was a genius. And he said, fine, if you don't like the way Mozart did it, write your own. And that challenged me to come back the next week with something that sounded good. And indeed, I did write my own. Now, it doesn't mean you can get away from and never do the skills, because they go, you know, in tandem. Once you have the skills on a guitar, you can play more chords and you can play them in different ways. But becoming a composer, as you become a learner, helps you realize that you have a voice too.
We have a Facebook page, and there are a couple of videos we've put up on the Facebook page. One is of a little girl in a car seat conducting Dvorak.
Oh, yeah.
There's another little girl who is conducting a chorus. It might be in Ukraine. I'm not sure.
Love it. Love
yeah,
it.
It's darling. What are those kids doing from your point of view?
Yeah, I mean, you'd be really surprised at what these kids are getting from hearing music. It's so rich. The children are listening to different instruments. And believe it or not, at a very young age, they can tell the difference in some of these instruments, even if they can't label them. Sometimes they can even label that blaring trumpet that comes through to announce the next theme in the symphonic piece. When they're conducting, they're showing you that they have rhythm. And in fact, a lot of kids start with a natural rhythm. There were people in Temple's music department. I was on a dissertation committee where we talked about singing back and forth as if it's a conversation. And in fact, young children will do that. So when our children are hearing music, listening to it, we are opening up doors, not only for the learning of rhythm and patterns, which are going to go on to be the foundation for mathematics, but also for the melody lines that are going to express emotions. And we now know how tied in emotions are to our later thinking. This is deeply powerful, and it is deeply upsetting that the arts are down some 16% in preschools today from what they were just 12 years ago. That needs to change. I think, you know, the lesson for all of us, as somebody who studies developmental psychology and watches it as a keen observer of parents and children, is that sometimes we have an image of what we want for our children. And sometimes we're not as good at hearing their vision or helping them play to their strengths. You know, all kids have to learn the basics. They have to learn how to write. They have to learn how to listen. They have to learn to be citizens of tomorrow. But they also have strengths. And to be able to follow their passion and not presume what that passion is a very big deal. And so I think... for me, as a grandmother now, and as a mom, that's what I hoped for in my kids, and each one of them has found their passion and gone for it. You know, children, they don't come to us as blank slates to be filled by our grand wisdom. They come to us with personalities and dispositions. And if we are sensitive to those personalities and dispositions, we can provide the experiences along the way that will allow them to test those dispositions and to make of it what they can. And if they decide that's not quite right and they want to try something else, then we put more experiences in their way. I think what we don't want to do is be a hurdle. And many of us, I think, sometimes become barricades because we have a certain image in mind. It's not to say that some of us are totally right in the way we parent or others are totally wrong in the way we parent. I don't think it's like that. I think for every parent I know of, including me, and gosh, I had years and years of developmental psychology, right? But including me, I was experimenting the whole way. And I was learning as much from my kids as I hope they were learning from me.
Sort of never ending, isn't it?
Never ending.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.